You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Frankly, outdoor mask mandates should just go, regardless of whether you're vaccinated. There are a lot of locales and states that still have blanket mask mandates. So even if you live in a suburban area or rural area where you don't see that many people, there's still mask mandates in place. That does not make any sense. So I actually think outdoor mask mandates can go.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of that. You too, I assume. This is April 27, 2021. That is Dr. Leanna Nguyen. She is a CNN medical analyst. She had one time served as a Baltimore health commissioner. She's in an interview with Anderson Cooper, Anderson Cottonmouth, as I call him, because he's normally spewing a lot of poison when he opens his mouth. So she's on there, and she's saying, as you heard, I think masks can go. We don't need, certainly in rural areas, outside, you don't need a mask. CDC trying to come out with new regs on when and how you should wear a mask. 1, 2, 3, 20. And, of course, once you have the mask, do you have to, or you have the vaccination, do you have to wear a mask then as well? It's interesting because as he's doing this interview with their own analyst from CNN, then he starts trying to say, well, he's trying to get her to change her mind. It's a pretty interesting exchange. I'll have that as part of our program over the next 2 hours. We also have the issue that, in fact, this story just crossed. Let me bring it up to you because I just saw it come across. The Andrew Brown Jr. shooting. This is the one that took place that now is catching a lot of attention, and understandably so. The autopsy, according to what has been released on this particular shooting, I'll give you more details in a moment, but the autopsy at this time, according to them, is indicating that he was shot by deputies. This taking place in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Andrew Brown Jr. fatally shot in the back of the head while trying to drive away from sheriff's deputies who had already shot him 4 times in the right arm. That is what the autopsy is saying, and that being released with the permission of the family. Well, of course, when he was shot in the head, he lost control, crashed into a tree. A copy of the death certificate says he died within minutes as a result of the gunshot wound to the head. Deputies say they shot him because they were trying to execute a warrant. And the defense attorney standing up for the family says he's unarmed at the time police opened the fire, that he was, quote, trying to run because he was scared for his life. Again, this is one of these things you're going to have to get more details. You can't judge it right away. Now, if you're going to be of an opinion that cops are always right, you're already judging it. That's not a good idea. If you're the opinion cops are always wrong, you're going to judge it. That's also not a good idea. How about something called, facts. How about looking at facts and get all the facts? And generally, you're never going to get all the facts through the media in any fashion. You're going to have to be a member of the jury and watch facts laid out. But again, the attitude is that cops had no right to be shooting at that time. And again, the attorney apparently has, the Brown family has seen a 20-second clip of the video from one deputy's body camera that show what the attorney says was an execution. They've seen it. I haven't. I don't know what they're going to release, and it's certainly understandable that if they're not going to release some of it because it's too violent. The whole thing took place in less than 30 seconds. Now, with that in mind, of course, many are again crying out police brutality, maybe in this case. And then the overall thing that this nation is systemically racist. Systemically racist. That means in every corner and every part of our nation, under any guise or rule or anything else, they're looking to exclude people because of color. I want you to hear from the Kentucky Attorney General. He's a black man. He's a Republican. But he says, I think there's a better term, and we're not that way in this nation. We have our problems, but at the same time, we can move forward. We're also going to be joined over the next 2 hours by Fred Flight, Center for Security Policy, an expert on Iran. Story breaking, as we told you yesterday, John Kerry, as Secretary of State at one time under Obama, and then later trying to undermine Donald Trump, was releasing Israeli intel to Iran 200 different times. But something's got to be wrong with that. We're going to find out. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, price $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Beal Roofing. Covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beal Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The vice president's effort to stop the flow of illegal immigrants into the country today, a chat with the president of Guatemala, virtually.
I'm honored to meet with you. I look forward to traveling to Guatemala and meeting with you in person. And currently, our plan is to come there in the month of June.
Harris took that Zoom call from her ceremonial office. She still hasn't been to the border, but says she wants to.
Yes, we're working on the plan to get there. We have to deal with COVID issues.
COVID issues have not prevented the vice president from traveling to other states on official business. So why is this different?
What is she referring to?
Well, I would certainly have to ask her team about that specifically, but I would tell you also that her focus is not on the border. It's on addressing the root causes in the Northern Triangle.
So they say that, of course, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki, that was all part of a Fox News report, talking about how VP Harris still has not gone to the border. Now, you recall, of course, President Biden, in March, appointed Harris as his point person to address the migrant surge of the southern border. If you were appointed to oversee that, do you not think it's a good idea to go down and see firsthand? But she's not going. She's not going, hasn't gone, doesn't show anything. And now they're trying to tell you, we have to be concerned about COVID. We have to be concerned about COVID. And yet she's traveling all over the U.S., but primarily, and it's just not by coinkydinky, she is going primarily to blue states. In fact, I don't think she's been to any red state. And blue states, by the way, are the ones that are showing the worst numbers on COVID. They're the ones still in big lockdowns and higher numbers, while Texas and Florida have pretty much opened up, no mask mandate. But if she's fearing COVID, she's going to the wrong states. I've told you before, just because she goes there, it would not necessarily change anything. I understand that. There are folks who believe simply that just her presence there would be a good idea and it'd be a good photo op, but she doesn't want a photo op if it shows thousands upon thousands still streaming across the border in a refugee camp or what they call reception centers for these unaccompanied children, showing hundreds of them jammed into a pod that's really built for maybe 120, and they got 400 in there and more. She does not want that kind of footage and video used, and if she goes down there, she knows it will be. So, she hasn't gone, apparently not going to go, but I'm going to give her credit on something. You heard the Fox report say that she is doing part of the job dealing with the Northern Triangle, as Jen Psaki, the White House, said, by holding virtual meetings with the leaders of some of the Central American countries and Mexico. And I'm going to give her credit for one thing. Yes, I'm going to give Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, credit for something. Vice President Kamala Harris. I have a reason I'm stressing that. I'll explain in a moment. But when she's on these virtual meetings, sitting somewhere in D.C., I assume in her office or a meeting room, and doing a virtual Zoom with these leaders wherever they are, she's not wearing a mask. She's sitting there without a mask. She's at least intelligent enough to know, I don't need a mask to do this. And yet Joe Biden the other day, when he was addressing all of these countries, 20 different countries and the various leaders about trying to get control of our climate and everything, how bad and dangerous it was, what we need to be doing and get to zero emissions, he's the only one of the world leaders on a Zoom call with a mask on. You want to say look stupid? I would agree. I mean, that just totally sends a wrong signal. But I guess they felt so obliged that we got to preach to people all the time to wear a mask, so I'm going to do it here. And it made no sense. Let me take just a moment to say why I was stressing Vice President Kamala Harris. No, it's not because any day she could become President Harris. It's a reaction I got from one of my daughters on a story I did last week, reference her, and I referred to her as Harris. And my daughter sent me this note. I'm going to share this with you because I think, you know, I've been here before on this kind of thing, and I related it to her, but my kids are pretty smart. They got it from their mama. But what they do is they will sometimes say, hey, Dad. And she called me out because I was calling Kamala Harris just Harris. And here's the way it goes. Dad, I hope you take this in the spirit it's meant to be, which is loving and helpful and constructive. Whoa, I better back up. This is going to get bad when my daughter writes me something like that. That's almost what you'd hear a parent telling a child, as in they also say after the spanking, believe me, they'd hurt me worse than you did. Oh, I don't think so, Dad. But anyway, she goes on and says, I worry about you constantly referring to the vice president as Kamala versus Harris, the vice president, or Vice President Harris. I can't imagine that you ever referred to Mike Pence as Mike versus Pence, vice president, or Vice President Pence. I just don't want anyone misinterpreting that and accusing you of being racist or misogynistic. My daughter making it very clear, Dad, those kinds of activities will, you could get labeled racist or misogynistic. My response to her is, you're locked up in your room, stay there. No. I said, actually, I used to use the title instead of just using last name, only because it's proper and respectful. And I said, I'm glad you have that attitude, but the way things are, in fact, in the end, I was referring to Trump just as Trump, so I'm not doing it based on preference. Yes, in the business originally, and I'm talking about when Abraham Lincoln was my president, I would call, oh, no, wait a minute, I don't want to go back that far. Anyway, I've always believed that you should say President so-and-so or Vice President so-and-so. We have reached a point now where, and it took me a while. I just didn't want to use the last name. I don't care who the president was. And I wasn't doing it to be dishonoring them, but that's what it comes across to some, and I understand that. You know, there was a time that you did not put the president's name up as just a last name, and you certainly didn't call by the first name. I have called President Joe Biden Joe before. I've even called him Uncle Joe. I have referred to Vice President Kamala Harris as just Kamala from time to time. I never did refer to President Donald Trump as just Donald. I did not do that. So I'm guilty of that point. And I never called Vice President Pence just Mike. She's right. Listen, when your kids speak to you, if you raise them right, I think it's worth listening to them. And that's why I'm stressing it so much now. So you can share that with your family and say, Larry's kids told him he better straighten up. I appreciate it. I do. Well, now that we got into that rabbit hole, let me get back out. Vice President Kamala Harris is still not going to the border. And Texas Congressman Troy Nehls, a Republican, see, I gave his full title name. Oh, yeah, Larry, because he's from Texas and a Republican. No, I gave it because I needed to identify who it is anyway. Texas Congressman Troy Nehls, Republican, said, so the vice president is using this excuse of COVID as to why she's not going to the border? He says, back in your face.
That's the excuse that this administration is going to use. And look at her. She's been jet-setting around this country, going to all the different blue states, talking about this infrastructure plan and everything else. So, no, this isn't COVID, Kamala, and you know it.
Oh, and you know what, Congressman Nehls, you just got nailed as well. You said Kamala, didn't you? But this issue on the border is not getting better. It would if they would simply go back to the Donald Trump policy, and that is you stay in Mexico until we process your claims if you're seeking asylum. And our borders are not open for anyone and everyone just to come in because they want a better life and a better job, which should be a very big issue for Democrats. Is on one hand, they're claiming this country is systemically racist. Nobody has a chance here, especially if you're a person of color. I would say 90%+ of those trying to come into this country, legally or illegally, are, quote, persons of color. We don't deny them. We judge them on what's the need and are the numbers we're allotting for legal immigration. But illegal, we say, no, you're not supposed to come here. But and yet they are still coming here, even though the Democrats are insisting this is a racist country. You don't want to be here. And I don't see any Democrats packing up and leaving because we're such a systemically racist issue and country. Have we had problems? Yes. Do we have a stain on our history? Damn right we do. Are we trying to do better? Yes. Do we need to maybe force it and each and every day? Yes. And every time there's another police shooting, especially if it's a black victim shot by cops, regardless of the color of cops, are there legitimate questions to be asked? Yes, as it is in every police shooting. But when we're talking about these illegals, let me give you something that they're doing here that this should really give you the true understanding of Democrats, since they're so concerned about how bad this country is. The Biden administration announcing today a new effort to sanction transnational organizations that help smuggle migrants across the southern border. They're trying to solve the migrant crisis, I thought. Now they're looking for a new effort to sanction such organizations. Operational Sentinel will target transnational criminal organizations that peddle in smuggling migrants to the border and into the U.S. The Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas described it as a, quote, broad approach and a strong one. He said, we aim to cut off access to that profit by denying these criminal organizations the ability to engage in travel, trade, and finance within the U.S. We intend to disrupt every facet of the logistic network these organizations use to succeed. Well, wouldn't that start with not letting folks come across the border illegally? You want to stop them from benefiting by either smuggling drugs and or child smuggling for sex purposes once they get here for whatever person and reason? Why don't you just put a stop to all of that? No, No, they say we're going to go after the criminal organization. They're not going to put one dent in the cartels like that. There was a piece, we've had him on before several times, John Davidson with the Federalist. He did a piece the other day. I was trying to book him for today, and he couldn't make it, where he talks about how the drug cartels are paying American teenagers, to help smuggle illegals into the country. Now, these teenagers coming in, the teenagers assisting in this are getting anywhere from $3,000 to maybe $4,000 per trip. Fast, easy money for them, unless they get caught. And then there could be some hell to pay, but if they're all juveniles, just barely aged to drive, then who knows how severe it will be. It would help dramatically if the Biden administration would simply go back and say, you know what? Let's just stop anyone coming across again. But they won't do it because that's too much like Trump did it. And they cannot turn back. I mean, they want to. I will guarantee you they want to do that. But they got to figure out how we're going to frame it, how we're going to spin it so it looks like a better idea than what Trump had, more humane and so forth and so on. That's what they're going to try to peddle. Good luck with that. And coming up in the next segment, how the education secretary has plans to make sure teachers are woke and what it means for students. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Biden's education secretary, Cardona, had been a Connecticut education commissioner. And in 2019, he sent an email out wanting to ensure teachers were more supportive of a new woke curriculum the state of Connecticut was implementing. They wanted to create a new high school course titled African American, Black, Puerto Rican, and Latino Studies, which would be optional for that upcoming school year, but then required starting in the fall of 2022. I want to stop right there. I have no problem with us learning about different cultures and so forth, but here, let me read through the list again. You tell me what's missing. Just give me, no, not whites, just the whole idea here is that you've been taught nothing but white history. That's the idea. So, but what they're saying, it's going to be a course on African-American, Black, Puerto Rican, and Latino. Asians, I'm sorry, you're left out of that. And all this wokeness they keep trying to shove in everybody's face, often they end up shooting themselves in the foot. And that's a perfect example. Before we wrap up today, James Carville is on an interview, and he says the problem with the Democrats today, pretty much I'm going to sum it up in just a brief reading of what he said, is the Democrats today are just too woke. Now, of course, that's James Carville from Louisiana, who once served as the advisor for Bill Clinton and got him elected. It's just too woke. Well, we'll get into that in more detail later. But here's something you need to make note of, and I guarantee you political figures are. We've got the 2020 U.S. Census. It shows Americans moving south and west, and that's going to shake up a number of congressional seats in some states. Five of the seven states set to gain House seats are run by Republicans. Why? Why? Well, Democrats are fleeing strongholds like California and New York, taxes, crime, and everything else. Arizona, which some say had the potential to gain the seat, ended up staying the same. California, close to keeping all 53 congressional districts, had the third largest net migration loss ever recorded. So they're still working that as to how that's going to work out. And, of course, then there's where the issue comes when you reapportion congressional maps. That's where the term gerrymandering comes in, that somebody might be trying to set it up in such a way that you're Republican, but they're going to draw your district very small around where you are actually living in there, and then they're going to expand most of it into a Democrat stronghold where you're not going to hold office when that goes into effect. And it works the other way, too. It's not just the Democrats doing that game. Republicans do as well. But this census is going to, it's what is really showing and emphasizing again, we've got folks in some of these blue states that they don't want to stick around anymore. Blue states such as Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, all losing seats. Now, some of the blue states, because they're kind of wide open and days that represent a time past, Colorado and Oregon, blue, but they're gaining one seat. Red states, Texas gaining two congressional seats. Florida, Montana, and North Carolina, they're each going to get an extra seat in Congress. Ohio and West Virginia, both led by Republicans, did lose one seat each. New York did suffer the slimmest loss of one of its seats, because one of the areas were just 89 people short of dropping them another congressional position. These congressional maps won't be redrawn until later this year at the earliest. And then we'll begin to see some effect come the 2022 midterm election. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to bring you up to date on this North Carolina shooting, and also, again, the issue, is this nation systemically racist? You're going to hear when we return after the break. The first voice you're going to hear is a Kentucky Attorney General, black man, the first black elected to the Attorney General's office, and one of the few elected at all in Kentucky. And he's going to start answering that question right away. Is our nation systemically racist? He's a black man. I guess he would know. Of course, he's already Republican, so you might say, well, he's slanting his view. You think? Here he comes after the break.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it comes to insects in the world, we are outnumbered. A University of Nebraska researcher estimates that there are 10 quintillion insects. That's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it. Now you know you need Rodler, Rodler Pest Solutions. Here's another fact. When one insect gets in your home, more will come and spread and multiply your kitchen, your bathroom, your bedroom. Call Rodler Pest Solutions immediately. Rodler, family-owned and operated for three generations. If you've never used Rodler, I encourage you to start now. If you haven't used Rodler recently, do it now. This is the season when the invasion starts. And remember, we're outnumbered. Get help. Call Rodler, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER. Or check the website, rodtler.com, 877-ROTTLER, Rodler Pest Solutions.
Just take those old records off the shelf. I sit and listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I like that old time of rock and roll. Don't try to take me to a disco.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I don't believe this country is systemically racist. What I believe is that this country has always tried from the very beginning to become a more perfect union. And certainly we've had our challenges throughout this nation's history, and there's no hiding from that. But when you hear comments like you heard from President Biden and others that throw fuel on the fire, that explode the tensions that we have in this country, that's not good for hoping to unify this country.
Well, again, those are the words, as I told you to be ready to hear, are the words of the Kentucky Attorney General, Daniel Cameron. And he's talking about and answering the question, do you think this country is systemically racist? As you heard him say, I don't believe this country is. I believe the country has always tried from the very beginning to become a more perfect union. And we've had challenges, the nation's history, there's no hiding. And see, that's kind of why I've always felt that all of these statues and monuments that they wanted to tear down, they should stay there. You can add a plaque to them and say, this was what did exist, but no more. My Jewish friends are certainly very glad there's a Holocaust museum in this nation, and all the camps, the concentration camps, Dachau and so forth, that are still open in Poland and elsewhere, where folks go and see what it was like. They want them to see and keep those up. Now, if you want to destroy anything, that would be something I would definitely wipe out. But they want it there. They want it there as a reminder of what was, but no more. At least that's my belief and has always been reference to statue. You can't wipe out history. Just acknowledge where it was and what was wrong or right about it. And things do change. And was slavery wrong? Yes, of course, it's wrong. Many of the fathers of this nation, of course, were involved in it because that's the way things were then. Doesn't mean it's right at that point. And there was slavery in every nation. There was slavery before Christ constantly. Anytime one group could get control of another and use them to do their menial work, they were going to do it. But here is again the Kentucky Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, and saying, no, I don't think so. But he also made a point of saying, when you hear comments like you heard from President Biden and others, that just throws fuel on the fire. He's talking about the remarks President Biden made, following the guilty verdict against Derek Chauvin for the death of George Floyd. Guilty on all charges. And after the verdict, of course, President Biden made some remarks while the jury was deliberating and said words to the effect that I pray they will come to the right verdict, and basically that it was a horrible crime. And he said, I'm saying these things only because now they are locked up. And that's the other point. See, the jury was never sequestered. They were at home with their families Sunday evening as Congresswoman Maxine Waters is in the street demanding guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't get it, we're going to get in the street and be more confrontational. She later said, I'm not trying to incite anything, but you let any Republican, conservative, or Trump supporter go out and make remarks like that, they will be immediately charged with incitement. Well, what President Biden said the other day, after the verdict came in, and well, I'll let you listen to it directly, and this is what the Kentucky Attorney General was referring to, is saying those kinds of remarks at that point, you're just throwing more fuel on the fire. Again, these are the words from President Biden after the verdict, finding Derek Chauvin guilty on all charges.
The knee on the neck of justice for black Americans. Profound fear and trauma. The pain, the exhaustion that black and brown Americans experience every single day. The murder of George Floyd launched a summer of protest we hadn't seen since the civil rights era in the 60s. Protests that unified people of every race and generation in peace and with purpose to say enough, enough, enough of this senseless killing.
Up to that point, up to that statement, I thought, you know, I'll give the president credit for some of the remarks, but that I think it was mainly that last part that the Kentucky general was saying, and of course he's not in favor of racist and lawless killing of folks of color, because he is one of them. But he said the attitude was, everybody thought this is a time for President Biden to say justice has been served, we're unifying this country, but he went a different direction. And to that extent, that's what Kentucky Attorney General Cameron was saying, that those kinds of the words or the way he stretched it, the way he said it, again, this is the opinion of the Kentucky Attorney General. He said, I don't think President Biden was helping at that point. I think, and again, he's just basically throwing fuel on the fire.
I try to stay away from hyperbolic terms. I try to make sure that I reflect love and Christ in my comments and try not to be caustic. So I'm going to continue to do that. I'm going to continue to reach out to folks that have different views from me. Of course, again, as I stated earlier, we have challenges in this country. But the promise of a more perfect union is always one step away, always one step closer. And I think that together we can get there if we put aside these hyperbolic terms, if we put aside casting aspersions on one another, and if we hold hands and walk together into our future.
He is the Attorney General, so he's also responsible for the laws and enforcing the laws of the state of Kentucky as well. So if anything involves police abusing their power in Kentucky, especially that might have a racial relationship to it, then that's part of his job to make sure he sees it as prosecuted properly. To that point, the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, Democrat, was on CBS 60 Minutes over the weekend. And it was very interesting because he was asked by a question by Scott Pelley. Do you see this evidence that the death of George Floyd was a hate crime? The response from Minnesota Attorney Keith Ellison was very interesting. It was leveled, measured. Here's what he said. I wouldn't call it that because hate crimes are crimes when there's an explicit motive and bias. We don't have any evidence that Derek Chauvin factored in George Floyd's race as he did what he did. Stop and think about that for a moment. Many were of the opinion that because it was a black man, that's why Derek Chauvin was treating him the way he did. And many will always be of that opinion. Here's the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison, a black man, Democrat, said, we don't have any evidence that Chauvin factored in George Floyd's race as he did what he did. If you were asking me, this is the question that's going to be asked of Ellison, do you think he'll agree it's a hate crime? And I was thinking, if he thought it were a hate crime, he'd be filing those charges. He hasn't, so maybe he just doesn't think there's enough for it. But I have to admit, I'm surprised, and yet I will praise Keith Ellison, and he's a guy I don't often praise, that when he said there's no way any evidence that the way Derek Chauvin was treating George Floyd had anything to do with his race. And in fact, Ellison made this remark. I will admit I felt a little bad for the defendant. I think he deserved to be convicted, but he's a human being. Even Pelley said, Scott Pelley, I did not expect to hear from you a note of compassion for Derek Chauvin. Ellison's response, I'm not in any way wavering from my responsibility, but I hope we never forget that people who are defendants in our criminal justice system, that they're human beings, they're people. That's a very powerful statement. I mean, his statement in the face of that, the statement of Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, who's, again, a black man, who's a Republican, also an attorney general. If Ellison, those statements, if he means it, and really, and it's, I can't believe that he didn't mean it or he wouldn't have said it because he's opened himself up to a lot of attack and condemnation from some on the left by some of those remarks. I praise both of them for saying, let's try to move past some of this. And to that extent, the FBI has opened a civil rights probe into the death of Andrew Brown Jr. in North Carolina last week. I was telling you about it, breaking news a moment ago, that the family released the autopsy that showed that he was shot five times, four times the arm, a fifth in the back of his skull as he was driving away. They're calling it a kill shot to the back of the head. Well, that's the one that killed him, so that's why they can say it. But was that in the intent? He was trying to evade officers, trying to get away. And it went south in a hurry. There are a lot of details yet to be worked out. They were trying to serve an arrest warrant. But if the attitude is they were out to execute him, well, that's an entirely different story. Now, Molly Hemingway, Federalist senior writer, says the problem we're having in the nation right now is a wave of violent crime.
Less than having a police crisis in this country, we have a violent crime crisis in this country. What's happened in that last year since Democrats decided not to do police reform is that violent crime has gone up in all of the major cities, or all but one of the major cities, like the top 60 cities. And you've seen a 33% increase in homicides, upticks in, you know, arson and rape and robbery. And these are things that affect people in low-income communities, precisely the communities that we are told people care about.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want you to hear Molly Hemingway talk about another issue. The other issue for the rising crime and the attitude on the streets. It's coming up when we continue. Please stay with us. Let your friends and family know we're on the air.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I'm not sure if we need police reform so much as we need media reform, because it's been a decade of the media really telling lies about the state of policing in this country and what the real problems are with crime in this country.
Well, again, those are the words of Molly Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. You heard her say previously in the previous segment that we don't have a police crisis. We have more of a violent crime crisis. And she said since Democrats have decided they want to pull things back and reorganize police, pull money, you got violent crime going up in all the major cities. 33% increase in homicides, arson, rape, so forth. But she also points out the ones most affected, those in low-income communities, the communities we're told everyone cares about. But then she also makes a point, and I'm glad she did. The media has a big play in this. He said basically the media spent a decade telling lies about the state of policing in this country. And that goes both ways. Sometimes vilifying cops when they shouldn't have. Sometimes excusing them when they shouldn't have. You may not be a fan or even really know who Rose McGowan is. She's an actress, also an activist. She called out Kamala Harris at that time before she was vice president. She called her out because she was accepting donations from Harvey Weinstein when Attorney General of California. McGowan was one of the first to accuse Harvey Weinstein of rape. So she's made a name for herself on that way as that platform as well. She was doing an interview the other day talking about the political parties. Now, if I had to hazard a guess about where she stood, I'd say probably left of liberal. It's a bad stereotype position that I have for Hollywood and many of those out there, but they're not like that, not all of them. In fact, that's why yesterday we ran the extensive sound bites of Tyler Perry. Of course, he's not really based in Hollywood, but that's part of his business with his company based in Atlanta. That they're not all wacko liberals. They're not. Now, here's Rose McGowan, who basically came through a cult. I mean, she's been in a cult before, and she uses that as an explanation and a rationale for what she thinks of Republicans versus Democrats. Listen to this first cut.
I am not here to make people feel bad about their political choices, but I am here to say that you might be in a cult too if you don't know the signs. And I do believe Democrats most especially are in a deep cult that they really don't and know about and aren't really aware of. And I leave the Republicans alone more because I do respect people more that are like, this is what we are. This is what we're about. This is what we're against.
In other words, she's saying Republicans don't hide it. That's what they are, and they make it very clear. Earlier this year, she did slam the House of Representatives' impeachment of President Donald Trump. She called it at that time cult propaganda for the left and an effort at mass distraction. Yes, yes. Rose McGowan, actress and activist, says the Democrats are a cult.
Whereas I find the Democrats are really pretty much almost against all the same things. They're against changing the world for the better, and they're for keeping a system in place that is for so few people and benefits so few, but they masquerade as the helpers. We would do this. The world would be perfect if only those Republicans would get out of the way. Well, okay, you've got control. So now what? What are you going to do to make the world better?
Now, that is a good question. And the same should be asked of Republicans when they hold all branches of government as well. See, I'm of the opinion, regardless of what party you are an American. Are you doing what's best for America, not your political party all the time? Those of you who have known me a long time, and those of you who have listened to this program, know that Donald Trump, when he was running, was not my first, second, or even third choice when he was running against all those candidates at the time when Hillary was going to be carrying the banner for the Democrats. And I called Trump out numerous times. And, of course, Donald Trump and his followers have also been part of a cult. And it's understandable in some cases. In other cases, I think the label is being thrown around just because it's a catchphrase for many. We do need to be aware, regardless of where we stand, are we making sure we're Americans first? Actually, I think if we ever get to that point, we'll be back to where we can solve a lot more things. Keep in mind, the Democrats of yesteryear are not the Democrats that are out there now. And the Democrats that are there now are just barely hanging on because of the progressives taking more and more control. So coming up in the second hour, we'll be joined by Fred Flights, Center for Security Policy, talk about John Kerry. Did he sell out Israel, give Israeli intel to Iran? Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.